continued on side two, take one.
Let's see, where are we? We're at the Concordia Club annual review, and from there, because of my strong interest in the symphony and in music, and because I had established a minor reputation as someone who could put together a satiric lyric, I was, and my involvement with the Women's Symphony Association, I was approached by the symphony to help write a review that they did for several years as a fundraiser downstairs in the green room at Syria Mosque. We took off on satirizing the whole arts and literary and musical community in Pittsburgh, and we used to have a perfectly marvelous time. Gloria Kritz, who was the wife of the associate conductor Carl Kritz, was our director and choreographer. The orchestra in those days was not nearly so involved that they couldn't, that members of the orchestra who had a bit of ham in them wouldn't take off to participate in this. So we had William Steinberg participate 1 year, as I think he did a mock Wotan, and Teddy Salzman and Bernie Goldberg and other members. I was sort of a hanger-on among the orchestra people and dated some of them. And they were all participants in this review, which usually drew a big... It was the forerunner of the gridiron shows that they do today, which are more politically oriented. But it was done every year, and it raised some money for the symphony. And it helped me meet a lot of people who, if not directly, indirectly, I guess, helped to further the rest of my career. I joined the advertising business, as you know.
How'd that happen?
When I was fired from WPIT, it was not because they didn't like my copy. They liked it very much. They didn't like the idea that I couldn't type it fast. So they sent me down the street to a small advertising agency that was in transition. Milton Sussman and Bill Adler, and I'm sure you know Milton. Milton Sussman and Bill Adler had an organization called Milton Sussman Associates. And Milton hadn't thought about taking somebody on, but he knew me and my family, and he knew I could write a little, and said that he would take me on as apprentice wages, for which he might be sued today. But I was turning out a lot of work for about 6 months for what amounted to bus fare. But it was experience, and well, God bless Milton. I mean, he was very helpful in many respects, except for the money. But I quickly got frustrated in that job and was told by the visiting radio, and it was just the beginning of TV, so it was mostly the visiting radio salesman, that there was a guy named Bob Lando who had an agency up the street who they thought was looking for a part-time writer and was willing to pay more than slave wages. I was also the subject of a little discrimination, not religious discrimination at Milton's, but the other women in the office who were at the clerical and secretarial level very much resented that I had had a college education at what they labeled a fancy college, so they made life pretty miserable for me while I was trying to be an awfully nice girl. But, where was I?
Bob Lando.
Oh, Bob Lando. So that was, although I had known Bob peripherally in the community, I didn't know him well, and it turned out that he hadn't been looking. But I interviewed with him, and he suddenly thought maybe he was working too hard, and maybe a little help would be a good idea. So I was put on part-time as a writer, producer. It was within the first two or three years of television in Pittsburgh. And at Milton's, I had been told to run up the street to a station called WDTV, DuPont's Window on the World, first television station in Pittsburgh, and I was told that we had to do a television commercial, and Milton was darned if he knew how to do one, but we should go up there, figure it out, and put our client on the air. So we, a few of my associates and I, kind of felt we invented the television commercial in Pittsburgh. But at Bob Lando's, I had an opportunity to really learn on, not a learn on the job, and we had to invent the wheel.
I just ask a question. Mm-hmm. Did you ever learn to type?
Yes, I taught myself to type over the first summer out of college. I guess it was after that job, after the firing, I decided that although I knew at Milton's I had a I had access to secretarial help, and from there on in I was never without access to secretarial help, but it helped a lot to know how to type your own copy. And I did take a course at Shenley High School in the summer and learn, and I bat it out pretty fast now, not accurately, but fast. I haven't learned to use the word processor yet, though. I've been really resisting that. 5-year-old typewriter that I adore, and I have a secretary who converts it to word processor and does all the printouts and corrections, and so as long as I have that luxury, I'm not forced to learn. I think staring at that screen bothers me too, but I'll get there.
First time you have a need.
Yes, I think well.
You don't have a need.
Then I retire. Before I retire,
that's
I don't know.
That's what we did. When I needed it, I didn't use it. Mm-hmm. Now that I'm retired.
When I'm without a secretary, I will darn well learn how to use one.
That's right.
But you said there was something fascinating about interrupting a paper of like 50 or 60 pages in the middle and taking something out and inserting something in without redoing the whole
paper. It takes away the cutting and pasting.
Yes, it certainly does. No, I know all of its virtues. I mean, people around here kid me a lot about resisting entering the 80s.
I agree with you. I went through the same thing. It was when I no longer needed it for any reason except as a toy.
Yes.
Now it's a toy.
I hope to make it that someday, but not today.
Too busy.
I have come to the conclusion that a word processor is like a, oven.
A microwave.
Oh. Yeah. Now, my husband, we can't have a microwave. My husband has a pacemaker, so we haven't entered the 80s on that one either.
You'll manage.
I think, well, we have barely on my cooking, rudimentary cooking.
All right, you got to Lando's.
Got to Bob Lando's, and it was a very lucky move because he was a man who... his associate, Joe Guskey, told me had success written all over him, and he had vowed when they were both at the University of Missouri School of Journalism that wherever Bob Lando went, that's where he, Joe, was going to go, because he knew that whatever Bob touched would be successful, and it's pretty well turned out that way. And he was marvelous at about not paying any attention to gender. At a time when it was still very difficult in Pittsburgh, even in the communications business, where it's always been easier for women to get ahead than some other businesses. But then, I don't know where I started that sentence. At any rate, he let me fly, and it was a young agency. I had the opportunity to become a what amounted to a founder. I entered the agency only a few years after Bob had started it, after the war, and helped. I was one of the four principals who helped build the agency to the point where it was the fourth largest of the of Pittsburgh advertising agencies, and then became a candidate for purchase by a major national agency, Marsteller, who bought Lando. But we were Lando from 1951 when I entered that firm until 1978 when we were bought by Marsteller. And I started from a position of sort of factotum, copywriter, radio producer, TV producer, an occasional time buyer, I became successively copy chief, creative director, once there were some people to direct, and a vice president of the firm, and then a director of the firm, and had the opportunity to buy shares in the firm, so that it was a happy circumstance for me as part of an entrepreneurial organization when we were bought. It was happy in many respects, but although monetarily it was happy, but in many other respects it was never as happy again as it had been when we were entrepreneurial and on our own and not monitored by the mother corporation.
You said there were four principals. Who was the fourth? Joe Gusky and Bob Lando?
Later on, Bernice, Joe died, and later on, Stan Marshall and Bernice Pricer. So those were the four who were in charge when, for many years, and until the firm was sold. After which, as you know, Bob, or you may not know, Bob went on to found the Athlete's Foot chain of athletic footwear stores, and he built a whole new business, almost backed into it.
And here you are.
And here I am. We were merged, Marsteller Advertising, through a complex series of additional mergers, was bought by Young & Rubicam. Young & Rubicam merged Marsteller Advertising with a European company named Avas Conseil in France, and we became HCM for about a year, and part of such a giant organization that no one was paying much attention to us here in Pittsburgh, which was when Burson Marsteller, which is traditionally a PR agency, that had decided in terms of the market, the way the market's going in the today, that it would be in this market healthy to add an advertising component. So Burson Marsteller, which had been a sister agency of the original Marsteller, merged with Marsteller, and now I am an advertising person and senior creative counsel vice president of Burson Marsteller.
Up at the top.
Well, it isn't president, and I don't want to be. No, it's about where I want to be, which I wanted to lead a relatively balanced life, and the where could I go? Well, there's a general manager, the office of the office position that is now occupied by one of the people who grew up in the PR person of our stellar end of the business who own us. But I never aspired to administrative work. I really wanted to stay in the creative end of the business. And right now, as I approach 60, I work very hard and I'm very involved, but I'm not going crazy, except on some days.
That's how you can cope.
Let's get back
to a few things now. We'll get back to your brother.
Yes, my brother, James Werner Kallman, who is my baby brother, who's 3 years younger than I am. And
what's the middle name again?
Werner, for my father, who was, we've had a harmonious relationship all these years. He married Judy.
Where did he go to school?
Jimmy went to the University of Pittsburgh. He went to Alderdice and the University of Pittsburgh. And graduated from there and went into the service, served in during the time, or just prior to the Korean War, so he was mostly stationed here in the United States, and he was in the Signal Corps and operated a television camera for a while and was very much interested in going into the TV business when my father, who was a much beloved man and a bit of very, very Victorian in his values, thought that that was really a new thing. He really didn't trust the theater as a business for a serious young man. And so he didn't want Jim to have any part of involvement in the TV business, as a result of which Jim's career took another course. I think as far as career is concerned, he probably would have been happier had he gone where his heart was leading him in the first place. But he's been in sales. He started out with the Hamburg Brothers, RCA. He went from there into the furniture business and has been a manufacturer's rep for a number of furniture companies. And is very good at what he does. It's just a field that doesn't allow you much. There's no settling back and enjoying it.
You're at it all the time.
You're at it all the time. Jim is happily married to Judy Cohen, was her maiden name, the daughter of Ruth and Bob Cohen.
The Pittsburghers?
Pittsburghers. Bob died some years ago. Ruth is a Berkman. I don't know if you know Milton Berkman. And my memory escapes me. Lil and Milton Berkman were Judy's parents and were involved in the ready-to-wear wholesale business here. Judy is now the head of the history department at Ellis School and has taught at Ellis, I guess, for as long as she's had a career, and is one of the, at least people tell me, is one of the venerated teachers in the among the private schools. And they have a daughter, Betsy, my niece, who is just coming into the job world now, and is the...
Where did she go to school?
Betsy went first to NYU and came home and finished her education at Pitt. The NYU environment was a little too much for her.
Really hard.
She led a very sheltered life here, and she's a kind of a, well, I guess a square kid compared to a lot of her contemporaries. She was not part of the drug scene. She was not part of the sex scene growing up in school, and all of her friends were leading what we used to call a fast life and sleeping with boys and taking drugs.
Special interest or talent?
She's involved right now in PR and marketing. But in the arts, so she started out with Pittsburgh filmmakers, and she was just stolen away from the filmmakers by the Pittsburgh Center for the Arts, and she is now she was hired on as a PR person, and she's at the beginning of her yeah. career and
finding her way
has a lot to learn, but is enjoying it, and she's a driven, somewhat workaholic kid. I wish she didn't take it quite as seriously as she does, but...
When you and your brother were growing up, did you do very much traveling with your parents?
We spent most of our summers in the early 30s, at the Falk Farm in Shelsburg, Pennsylvania. Leon and Kitty Falk lived across the street from us and were very close friends of my parents, and Ellen, their daughter, was my closest friend.
Kitty was a very dear friend of mine.
Really? Oh, she was absolutely wonderful. I saw her last, we went on one of her visits here, but the year before I married Leon, I was traveling around the world with a friend on my way to a business destination, decided to go to Amsterdam by way of Tokyo, and spent some time in Israel along the way, and Kitty was my guide. Well, of course, because of this circumscribed society, it was Aunt Kitty and Uncle Leon, and they were all surrogate parents, and the Falk family, and the Kalaman family, and the Liz and John Cohen, I know the family and their kids, their kid, we all went up to the Falk Farm during the summer, stayed in the guest house.
Where was the farm?
In Shelsburg, Pennsylvania, about 8 miles from Bedford. And it was, again, I was lucky. It was a wonderful part of growing up. We mm-hmm. spent about a month there every summer, and we would go on rounds with the farmhands every day, and we learned to milk the cows, and we worked in the produce fields, and we swam, and rode horses. And
were they breeding cattle at that time?
They were breeding cattle, and when I read Leon Falk's obituary last week, and it was calling attention to his prized jersey, Miranda, or something like, it wasn't Miranda, but I recognized her name, whatever it was, right away. And Miranda became Miranda's Ellen, named for her offspring, the cows, became named for the Falk children. So Ellen Falk and Sarah and Sigo and David were all part of my growing up. So our traveling, it was the Depression, and we didn't travel far afield. We went to Washington occasionally from Shelsburg during the summer to visit my great-aunt Hilda Schoenthal, my mother's aunt, who is Washingtonian and one of the first women to work for Gulf Corporation as an executive secretary.
Hmm.
And so she, I guess it was in, careers were in my mother's family. No, my mother's mother always wanted to have one and wanted me to have one, and was always expressed her earnest desire that mother raise a working daughter. But my great aunt Hilda worked for Gulf, and my great uncle Meyer, who was her brother and a chamber musician in Washington, was also employed by Gulf. And the annual pilgrimage to Washington was made every year by my family, at least my mother and my brother and me. The only other travels, we didn't travel abroad, we traveled to New York from time to time, and that was one of the highlights of growing up, of course, the New York discovery, I guess for all of us.
Mm-hmm. Still is.
Mm-hmm. Yes, although, I don't know, my heart doesn't quite quicken the way it used to.
Yeah.
Nobody travels the subway today.
No.
We did last time we were there.
I do when I'm with Leon sometimes, if he bludgeons me into it.
It's a great way to get from one place to another. Okay?
Now, let's get to you and your husband. When were you married?
Late. I had much to the anxiety of my mother and my aunts. I did a lot of dating through my early career years, but I never met anybody that I really felt enthusiastic about marrying, and so they started to worry about me a lot. But in 1970, I had come back from a business trip and was persuaded, although I was very tired, by my mother to come for dinner to Tilly Spire's house. She had introduced my parents. And while at Tilly's, I met the director, the relatively new director of the Museum of Art at Carnegie Institute, Leon Arkus, who had recently been divorced, and whom I had met very, I knew him very little. I had met him years before here and there at a public occasion and served once on a board with him, which didn't meet more than twice a year. So I didn't really know him. But at that party, we got acquainted. And at the time, I stayed at home for a long time. I was just moving into my very first apartment at age 41. I know that's terrible, but I was really awfully busy moving around. It was very convenient to live at home. And I was moving into my first apartment, and I had bought a picture from the International, which Leon had assembled that year, had just bought it and informed him so, and he said, oh, you're the one who bought the Wallace Ting, the picture. He said, well, just let me know when you get the picture, and I will be very happy to help you place it in your apartment. So he was the man who came to dinner to hang the picture, and several months later we were married.
Very nice.
And it was
with the museum.
He was with the museum, and it was just just instant compatibility, and it's been a wonderful marriage. Very supportive guy, and that I entered. That's when I entered into my second career, which was museum wife. And it was fun. It was exhausting, but it was fun until the time of Leon's, I don't call it retirement, graduation from the museum. It was fun being museum wife, meeting people all over, traveling with him all over the world in between, while trying to balance meeting the demands of this job. Trying to be hostess at the same time. I couldn't do it today. And that was 16 years ago, and I did it for about 9 years. And I think I would have folded after that if it had kept on much longer. But it's been a very exhilarating time together. He's an interesting man. With many interests, and we share a lot of those in common, and he has a drollery that is useful when you're trying to stand up to pressure. And let's see, what we've traveled a great deal, as I said, a lot of it in the earlier years of our marriage, in conjunction with Leon's job.
Tell us about some of the trips.
Oh, we've been... we've been quite often to France and Italy because Leon was working to organize shows of works of artists from those countries. And we also happen to love France and Italy. We've also spent some time in Scandinavia, Denmark, where Leon was made a knight of the Dannebrog. He's, for all I know, he's the first Jewish Danish knight. Queen Margareta conferred the knighthood because of all that he has done for Danish artists of the Cobra school in this country. And it was very amusing because Dr. Freehoff, when he heard the news, asked, why is this night different from all other nights?
Oh, wonderful.
So, Leon is a knight of the Dannebrog. The Dannebrog, which means literally, I think, white knight. I mean, it's an ancient order of Denmark, and it doesn't involve anything at all except that you receive a very nice rosette to wear on formal occasions, and you have a beautiful certificate, and at your demise, of course, you have to return all of it to the queen. Now, I guess you can keep the certificate and maybe the rosette, but the big medallion with the ribbons you have to return to the queen. We have met a great many museum people throughout Europe and artists throughout Europe in our travels, and with whom we've maintained some friendships. I'm trying to paint a broad picture. Our only non-art trip a couple of years ago, a major one, was to Africa, to Kenya and Tanzania, which was enormously exciting. The landscape is so, to use that word, awesome, but it is. And I never thought, I always thought, well, if I want to see animals, I'll go to the zoo, but really the context makes all the difference in the world, and it's a fascinating discovery.
I'm sure it is.
So,
at home. Do you enjoy cooking?
Well, I cook very simply for the two of us, mostly. It's one of the few enterprises in life that scares me to death as far as doing it for other people. So that when we entertain, I usually bring someone in to help me. And I don't entertain as I would like to in intimate groups very often because it is, even with help, it's so enormously time-consuming. And then to get around to all the people you want to see, it becomes impossible. So mostly we do once a year or every 2 years these days, we do some large-scale entertaining. Otherwise, like I said, it's occupational therapy at the end of the day for me to put a fish on the broiler and make a salad, but that's how I cook. It's not a skill.
Oh, right, yes,
no,
of course.
No, maybe I'll...
End of side 2, take 1, to be continued on take 2.